people sing of victory. Victory as the galaxy burns. Victory as the Imperium rots around us. Victory as humanity rages against the dying of the light.
Hello and welcome to Board Stupid, the podcast that loves talking tabletop board games, D&D, and other awesome stuff. I'm Wayne.
And I'm Ben.
Ben, what on earth are you doing here?
I've come here to talk some 40k 10th edition.
40k 10th edition. This is the first for the podcast. We haven't talked about Warhammer 40k. However, me and Ben have been neck deep in the Grimdark for the past few months at the very least, and have a long and storied history with the game and its lore. And we're going to dig into all of that because there is so much news to talk about. Ben, are you ready?
I'm ready.
I'm ready. And if you guys are ready, we're going to go get neck deep in grim dark goodness as we discuss all of the explosive news from Games Workshop, all about Warhammer 40k's 10th edition, including the rules, the lore, and any of the other interesting stuff as we dive in to this week's episode. We've never done a 40k episode here on the podcast before, and I've brought you in as a specialist for the listeners. What is 40k? That's all the high level.
So 40k is a tabletop war game set in the far, far future where everything has gone to hell.
Everything is bad. There is nothing good. Everything is bad. There's no good guys. It's no bad guys. It's all flavours of horror.
It is. And it's one of the longest running big war games.
I think so. It's a long old time. And the name 40K comes from that far future, the 41st millennium, like the year 40,000 plus or whatever it is, right?
So, yes.
Which is absolutely wild. So let's talk about your history with 40K. How did you get into the game? What edition? Did you play it much? Were you more the lore side or the model side? Because there's a few ways that you can enjoy the hobby that aren't all related to playing the game.
So originally I got into 40K probably when I was around maybe 7 or 8 years old.
Yeah.
And it would have been sort of second edition era at the time. And me and my brother both got quite into it. We never really understood how to play the game, but we loved collecting the models, building and painting them, and we loved the lore. We'd read everything we could get our hands on about it. And at the time, that would purely be through the codexes, of which there were very few, and also through the White Dwarf magazine, because this was all prior to the Black Library being a thing. So we played then. In terms of games, although I could never understand the game of 40k, I did play a fair bit of Tyranid Attack, which was kind of a repackaging of Space Crusade, if you remember that.
Okay.
Version of Hero Quest, pretty much.
Yes, that's right.
Also a bit of Space Hulk as well. So those were sort of our game playing times, but really only kind of kept that hobby up until probably I was around 11 or 12 when other hobbies took over. And I pretty much ignored the whole of 40K for another
20 almost, years.
Yeah, do I really want to admit to this? But yeah, probably almost 30 years.
Yeah, wow, that's amazing.
And it was only recently, during the pandemic, and during that, I was changing over jobs, and I had a week off where I just needed to chill and calm my mind. And I saw a little starter set and paint set for 40K, and I remembered how much I used to love that as a kid. And I thought, do you know what? That's perfect. And I pretty much spent my week off building and painting models and forgot how much I'd enjoyed it. And it kind of built from there, just pretty much just the hobbying side, so the collecting, building and painting and getting neck deep in horrendous numbers of lore videos.
Yes, lots of lore.
Still hadn't played the game.
Mm.
And it was only quite recently when it piqued your interest as well that we've dived headfirst into the game. And it's been fun.
It's been
intense.
Yeah. Really intense.
An awful lot to learn. And that's probably one of the things that we'll definitely lead into.
Yeah.
In 9th edition, as it stands now, is a huge bloated mess. So much to learn. I mean, we play a lot of different games, so they're akin to learning new rules for things. But it took weeks
of
doing things and running test games to even start to get our heads around it.
Yeah, it's a beast. And that's part of, I think, what's going to be interesting with that 10th edition reset. Because it looks like there's going to be quite a lot of changes. And I follow a similar trajectory to you, actually, in terms of history. I got into it around 3rd edition. The game itself has been around since 1987, I believe, in some way or another. So it is a little while. I was deep into it with friends at school, very young, sort of early teen, sort of similar to yourself, sort of 12, 13, 14, 15, around that sort of age. And then it sort of fell off the map for me and for a number of reasons. But I've always sort of followed it here and there in terms of the lore. I've always found that interesting. I mean, even if I hadn't bought models or miniatures, I've always sort of been, whenever I see a bit of 40K news, I'm like, I'll read a little bit about that, even if I don't fully grasp it because I haven't been in it in so long.
Yeah.
I'd always think, well, that's interesting. But yes, recently in the last sort of few months or so, we've been getting real deep. Me, you, Rick and Kev have been playing some games together. And I've got myself an army of custodies. I've been starting to build that and paint that. And that's been a great, great, I suppose, meditative activity.
You know,
definitely. Like very cleansing.
That's exactly what has pulled me back in.
Yeah.
Obviously, I've been building up my Smurf army.
Yes, that's right.
The boys in blue.
The boys in blue, the Ultramarines, absolutely. To be fair, I mean, they've had such a massive focus in the lore recently, and that was one of the ones I was considering when I was getting back in. But you'd already had the...
I'd already nabbed that one.
You'd already nabbed that one. And there is so much lore to go with the Adeptus Astartes or the Space Marines. They are Games Workshop's big sellers. And they get a lot of the focus. And so there's loads of model choice. I mean, you have a ton of stuff at the moment.
I've got such a variety of different things.
Yeah.
Still learning how to actually use them in fights. But I like having all the different...
It's fun to assemble and paint as well.
Really helpful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's allowing me to sort of find my ground and see where... Actually, if I collected another model with a bit more knowledge of the game and how that plays, it's a good starter. Space Marines give you lots of options to play how you want. So if people are just getting into it, it's a good recommendation to... Space Marines are a good start.
They'll always be supported.
Yeah.
Right, let's dig into 10th edition. So that brings you up to date on our history. And like I said, I was in at 3rd edition, which is back in the 90s or so.
Yeah.
And now we're at 10. 10 always feels like a significant number anyway,
It does.
Right?
It's something weird in our heads as human beings that we like these big milestone numbers.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. It's sort of in our nature. We think 10 means something interesting. So,
and it seems Games Workshop have taken that on.
They really do. Yeah.
Really doing something quite drastic with the launch of 10th, which is interesting to see when it's this far into its history.
It really is. And I think the overarching phrase they keep referring to is simplified, not simple.
Yes.
And you keep seeing that in their marketing for 10th edition. And I think that's a wonderful approach because I think tying into the whole news about Amazon funding a Henry Cavill-led series on 40K, that's probably going to bring a bunch of new eyes to the hobby.
Definitely.
So I think them targeting new players in some aspect is probably pretty wise.
Definitely, and I think now's the time for it. Like you say, Henry Cavill has kind of bought out anyone can have these sort of what have traditionally been considered very nerdy sort of hobbies, even amongst groups of nerds. That's the kind of next level it's always kind of been seen as. But it's being brought into the forefront that actually this is just a great, fun hobby with a lot of different aspects.
Yeah, you don't have to play the tabletop game.
No.
You can just paint and model. You don't have to do any of that. You can just enjoy the lore because the Black Library, which is the I suppose, lore arm of the 40K universe, which is a group of tremendously talented writers and Games Workshop staff, just have got, you know, what, hundreds of books at this point? I mean, there's
absolutely
many books.
Crazy, the number, considering it only started, the Black Library only really started early 2000s.
Yeah.
And there's hundreds of books and some really great books in there. I mean, I've just started with the books. I think I'm just beginning the fourth of the Horus Heresy, the kind of prequel to all the lore.
Sort of, yes.
Which to me is I like the exciting thing. This sort of like, they're like historic battles, but they're very futuristic. It's great premise.
Absolutely. It's sort of all of the turning point of the Imperium of Man, which is one of the major factions in 40K, and where they were doing really well. And then in the 30,000th year, it all kind of went wrong. But we'll get into that as we go. So Games Workshop announced 10th edition on the 23rd of March, so quite recently as you listen to this, or this release date of this podcast, at Adepticon.
Yes, which is quite interesting. They did it at Adepticon in the US, because traditionally, most of the announcements have generally been done at their own events in the UK, Warhammer Fest. Because if you don't know, Games Workshop is based in the UK. It's interesting they announced it at Adepticon in the US. It's probably they announced an awful lot at Adepticon, so it was a real big event for that. And I guess it shows how much the global market is a bigger focus for them these days.
Yeah, I'd say so as well. I mean, whenever you see sort of 40K channels on YouTube, there's people from all over, and there's quite a lot in the US.
Yes.
I mean, there really is.
It's huge over there, and yet there's kind of been little support from Games Workshop to that market in terms of these big reveals and events.
Yeah. So let's dig into the lore of 10th edition, and we'll see if we can bring people up to date really, really quickly. So, quick and dirty background. You have the Imperium of Man as one of the major factions in the world, and through the 30,000th year up until the 40,000th year, everything was kind of going okay until you had the Horus Heresy, which was basically a civil war that the Imperium of Man was suffering. And after that, you had things like the emergence of various other factions, such as the Tau and the Tyranids, or the Tyranids. I don't know how you say it. Tyranids, we'll call it. I mean, how do you say it, Ben?
When I was younger, I called it Tyranids. Now I call it Tyranids.
Yeah, I think
Tyranids. I think that's mostly from the videos I've watched about them.
Tyranids is probably right. And the Tyranids are kind of like, if anyone's ever watched
Starship Troopers.
Yeah. They are the sort of bug race of sentient bugs.
They're somewhere between sort of the bugs from Starship Troopers and the Xenomorphs from the Aliens films.
That's exactly that. And this 10th edition, the lore is focused around the Imperium of Man's struggles against the Tyranids. And it's their fourth major war with the Tyranids. They're calling it the Fourth Tyrannic War. The Fourth Tyrannic War.
Yeah, and prior ones have been kind of the armies popping up throughout the galaxy. This one seems to be a huge wave all coming in from the east, which is west, sorry.
The galactic west, that's right.
Which is sort of very different to all previous ones. And the sort of the view is that this could be a bigger force than has ever been seen before.
Exactly that. So in terms of the Imperium's encounters with the Tyranids, these sentient bug race, the first war was the Imperium encountering Hive Fleet Behemoth, which was halted on McCrag, home of your Blue Boys.
The Ultramarines.
Basically by sacrificing the entire First Company.
Pretty much,
That's how that one was kind of ended. The second was Hive Fleet Kraken, which infiltrated via Gene Stealer cults, infiltrated lots of the Imperium, and almost actually ended up destroying an Elder Craft world. And then before that was stopped. The third was the one that we know probably most recently and most about, which was High Fleet Leviathan, which struck from below the galactic plane and was halted as basically Inquisitors, which are sort of, I suppose you'd call them Imperium super special agents with they work outside of the structures of law and regulations. Exterminatus on lots of different worlds, and that's the Imperium's way of going, this world is too far gone, we're going to basically destroy it, burn it, commit genocide, If there's populations of there of people, we don't care. If for the greater good of the Imperium of Man, we're going to destroy this planet.
Yeah, they're pretty harsh.
Yeah, so the Inquisition of the Imperium of Man committed exterminatus on a number of planets to try and halt High Fleet Leviathan. Although, didn't really destroy it, more just kind of, you know, purged a little bit of it.
Stop the spread.
Exactly.
You could almost look at the Tyranids like a virus. They come and they destroy everything in their path, but they sort of eat that biomatter and they take it into themselves, so they're constantly gaining the knowledge and abilities of all of the races that they consume.
They consume biomass and use that as sort of learning. So if you destroy a Tyranid assault force or fleet in a certain way using a certain weapon, because they're all linked by one giant hive mind, the rest of the race will learn from that and create new creatures using the biomatter that they've absorbed and using the learning they've absorbed in order to counter that in future. Terrifying, really.
Scary stuff.
Really scary. And all, you know, controlled by this hive mind. Sort of,
yes.
Really interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting how it's... It's almost like a bio supercomputer.
Yeah.
That's running all of these different programs.
Absolutely. So as you say, this time though, this massive new invasion, bigger than anything seen before, has come from the Segmentum Pacificus, which is in the Galactic West, whereas the first three have been in the sort of East and South. And this is real bad for the Imperium because Robute Gilliman, who is the current, I suppose, head of the Imperium of Man.
It's the Lord Regent,
is it? Lord Commander, Lord Regent, something like that, of the Imperium of Man. He's currently tied up in the Galactic East with the Indominus Crusades. So trying to deal with the Arcs of Omen and Chaos and all of these terrible forces that the Imperium of Man is already trying to deal with. They're busy right now.
Yeah.
And so coming in from the West, where a lot of the worlds are unprepared and where a lot of forces have been pulled from there already in order to deal with the threats of the Arcs of Omen in the East, this couldn't have come at a worse time for the Imperium of Man, right?
No.
It's real bad.
One thing that might save them are the other races in this case. I think the Tyranids have been sort of widely accepted by the majority of other sort of species, like the alien races or the Xenos, and they've been widely accepted as one of the greatest threats to the universe.
Just a general galactic threat. Yeah.
So we'll probably see things like with the Imperium of Man having to team up or at least kind of accept help from all these other races that traditionally they hate. It's a very...
very xenophobic society, the Imperium, in the 41st millennium, right? They hate the alien. Like, whatever it is, if you're not human, we're going to stamp you out and instead we're going to put an Imperial flag here.
Yeah, this... They may not have any choice. They may have to rethink this. And with someone like Gilliman at the helm, he understands this. He's a master strategist and very clever with this sort of stuff. So he's going to understand that and have no choice.
Sort of adjacent to this is the return of Lionel Johnson in the lore.
Yes. So the Dark Angels, which is a faction of the Space Marines, he's their Primarch. So in the history of 40K, you had the Imperium was led by the Emperor, who is this great, incredible being. And to help him on his conquests, he created some sons, which became known as the Primarchs, which are almost sort of demigod-like figures.
Yeah, genetically created, demigod powerful beings, like borderline inhuman. You know, with like human characteristics, but phenomenally powerful with psychic powers and all sorts.
Yeah, and so most of these Primarchs, back in the Horus Heresy we mentioned earlier, a lot of these Primarchs were either killed or went missing, and for almost pretty much the 10,000 years up to the present day, the Primarchs... or at least the loyalist Primarchs, the ones on the side of the Imperium that hadn't turned to chaos and become deformed demons, they've all been missing, or dead, or in stasis.
Yes.
And I believe it was in 8th edition, towards the end of 8th edition, Robute Gilliman, the Primarch of the Ultramarines, was sort of brought back to life. He was brought out of this stasis where he was on the edge of death.
Yeah, he was gravely wounded back in the day and then was put into stasis to slowly try and heal, which he was ever so slowly, literally over thousands of years. And then I think it's the Eldar that helped him back to life, right?
Yes, I forget her name, but it was the sort of the leader of the Inari.
That's who were right.
Kind of a strange faction of the Eldar. She managed to sort of bring him back. And from that point, he kind of took over the Imperium.
He took one look at the state of the Imperium of Man and went, this is shit. Like, we need to fix this. And has done a relatively good job up and hitherto of getting things in alignment. You know,
That's his forte as such. He's the world's greatest administrator.
Yeah, exactly. That was his Primarch power. Of the 20 or so Primarchs that were created, each one had a specialisation. For Robute, it was, I can fucking organise the shit out of anything.
Yeah.
As well as being a master diplomat and other great stuff, but he is,
he's the greatest extension of Excel known to man.
He's a wonderful add-on. Yeah, great. Yeah, real good.
So he's been the only Primarch up to this point, the only loyalist Primarch to be back. And very recently, at the end of the Arcs of Omen storyline, which has been going hand in hand with the game, which introduced a new way to play called boarding actions,
which is very fun, by the way.
Fantastic thing, based on ships, tight rooms and corridors and stuff. Fantastic. At the very end of this, in the lore, the Primarch of the Dark Angels, Lionel Johnson, has returned. He has awoken from a slumber or come out of hiding.
Yes.
To save the day, essentially.
Yeah. And it's really going to be interesting as to how involved he's going to be in this Tyrannic War, because by all accounts, he's going to be dealing with stuff in the Imperium Nihilus, which is essentially the galaxy's been split in two during a whole bunch of various other lore issues, and you've got the light side of the galaxy and the dark side of the galaxy where things are kind of a bit more dodgy, and he'll be in there doing crusades and dealing with the Arcs of Omen and fighting various other traitor Primarchs that have been turned into demons, and Lionel is going to be busy.
Yeah, and he's quite hot-headed. He still has a bit of a bee in his bonnet about things. How involved he'll want to get in the rest of the Imperium,
And the administration and all of that. And
the only thing that might come to blows is him feeling that he's the one that deserves to be Lord of the Imperium. But I don't think he will.
He'd be more concerned with just, as you say, just sorting out his own legion, half of which just turned traitor.
Yes. Yeah. It's the stuff that's happened within his legion in the time he's been absent is quite crazy. There's a massive sort of mini civil war just within there. It's like a sort of mutiny.
Yeah, that's right. I'm super excited about all of this new development. I mean, it's phenomenally exciting from a 40K fan's perspective, because for years, Games Workshop could be accused of having a very slow-moving pace of story.
Yes.
Right. It would sort of just grind around various wars, not really progress. But from the end of 8th and through 9th up until 10th, it feels like there's been real advances in storyline.
Yeah, a lot of movement. And I wonder how much of that has been because of the pandemic.
Possibly.
Because it was the 9th edition came out in 2020.
Yeah.
Early in 2020. So I guess there's a lot of time they couldn't necessarily be full on in their offices, etc.
Yeah.
They couldn't do a lot of the development that would generally be done in games and being able to play. So what can people do when they're home on their own?
Right, Lord. Right.
Yeah. So I really feel that might have accelerated how they have developed the narrative within the game as much as with the books.
Yeah. You're probably right. And I think in alignment with the new series, as you say, and with the 10th edition, I mean, it's a great way for them to create excitement.
Yes. And there's lots of big things happening outside of the game, that game as well. There's the Space Marine 2 video game that's coming out, which Space Marine was kind of the most successful and probably the best thought of any of the games within the world.
Mm-hmm.
So that is supposedly coming out this year. Mm-hmm. Again, like the Amazon series, and there's been a lot of media attention and a lot of pop culture references have started coming through about 40K that didn't really exist before. So it was in South Park, for example.
Absolutely, which was amazing.
So I think it's a very ripe time for a reset and to draw new people in.
Yeah, and the more the better, I think.
I think so too. Yeah. And that's why this whole tagline of simplified, not simple, I really think is feeding into just making the game easier for people to get into.
Just more accessible, right?
Yeah.
And with that then, let's segue from the lore, unless there's anything else you want to talk about on lore-wise.
I think we're covered.
That's pretty much for now. Let's dig into the meat of the matter, which is the rules changes into 10th edition. And as we talked about, simplified, not simple, let's start with the fact that there's going to be an emphasis on data cards and indexes instead of codexes. And with that one fell swoop, your 9th edition codex is now obsolete.
Yes, so this is pretty much a hard reset.
It is, yeah.
The game previously has become very bloated. In order to play a game, for example, you will need the core rulebook. You'll need the two armies themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You would need a codex for each of those armies. And some of those, you need additional supplements. For Space Marines, for example, possibly the most straightforward, and what I would say that probably a good 70% of new players will initially start with.
Mm-hmm.
You would need to buy their codex plus a supplement for the different sub-faction of the army as well. So initially, and these books can be 30 to 40 quid.
Yeah.
So just for books, you're touching on nearly £100 just to play one army.
Yes.
If you were getting two, so that you could say you've got like two kids or whatever, or you're in a household and you both want to have an army to play each other, there's another 30, 50 quid.
Just paper before you even get into the models.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a lot to learn. They're big books, and there's hundreds of rules.
Yeah, there really are.
Lots of exceptions, lots of repetition of rules given different names.
Which
so
is very frustrating, actually.
Very, very annoying.
Yeah. Lots of page flipping.
Yes. You spend a good amount. I think the first game we played, there was probably around 2 to 3 hours of gameplay, a good hour, an hour and a half of just turning pages.
A good hour, an hour and a half, for sure. And I think they're really trying to remove that element of the game, right? Yeah.
So now they're saying that all of your rules for your army that you need while you're playing will fit onto two pages so that you don't need to flip a page. And I'm over the moon about that.
Yeah, and then all of your unit rules were going to be on potentially index cards that you can flip through. Way better.
Yeah. So previously you'd have in your codexes, you would have the individual data sheets for a particular unit or a particular model. And that would have a load of stats related to that model, then would have additional modifiers depending on what guns you chose or what weapons. And then, as well relating to that, there would be special rules that relate to these weapons or to the character or to their abilities that would be in another book somewhere.
Yeah.
That you would have to be flipping back and forth, going between several different books just to know how to fire a gun.
Which, it's a barrier to entry.
It is.
That, I suppose, emphasis of trying to put everything into just cards and a couple of pages is going to be such a massive revolution in terms of how the rules are presented to people.
Yes.
It's going to really remove that, I suppose, wall for a lot of folks.
Oh, totally. So everything you need to know how to use that particular unit will be on that page, on that one data sheet or card. It will all be there.
Absolutely.
And you won't need to be flicking around between each different unit. It will save an awful lot of time, make games more streamlined, and it just makes it easier to understand all round.
Definitely. I think it can't be anything except a positive thing, so that's really good. Yeah. Games Workshop said that the 10th edition rules and the initial index cards will be available all online for free day one.
That's massive.
It is huge.
That's great. I mean, we know where most of Games Workshop's money is coming from. Yes. It's from the models.
From the
they
minis,
make them themselves, and to play the game, you need the models.
Yeah.
There's never getting around. And that's what people want to buy. People want to be buying new models that they can build and paint. That's exciting. Spending £100 on some books...
is not exciting.
Is not exciting. No.
Especially if it's just data sheets.
Yeah.
Because they will eventually be creating much smaller codexes, which will be much more focused and have some other stuff and include things like Forge World relevant stuff. That's all going to be in the smaller codexes. And that's good. And they can be chock full of art and lore.
Yes.
And you know what? And if you sell it to me as a book of lore, I'd be like, oh, I kind of fancy that.
Yeah,
like,
and that's one thing that is great with the codexes. Although you need to buy them for how your units work and for extra rules and stuff in the previous editions, there is a great load of lore. So with this, all the old codexes becoming redundant, it's a bit of a kick in the teeth, particularly... Yep. For those who've only just bought them recently, for a couple of the armies, they have only just released them.
Yeah, within the last 6 months, which is wild.
So you spent £30 on a book that will last you a couple of months of gameplay. Bit harsh, but there is a lot of nice artwork and the lore and what have you in there. So it's
correct. It's not completely pointless, and the lore is amazing. And if it's kind of part and parcel of the game. And it's a really enjoyable part is getting your teeth into that for your individual faction. So I think they are lessening the blow somewhat by giving that free release of stuff.
And that free release of stuff is invaluable. Absolutely great. That, again, is something that's going to make it easier for new players to get into.
Yeah.
Because people will probably buy models still. And a lot of people do the hobbying side. Like for the last year or so, that I've been back into it, all I've been doing is building and painting models. That was my only real interest in it. So if I'd have had the rules for free, I'd have probably got into it a lot earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. Another positive side of that is that the sort of boarding actions rules are all still going to be compatible. And that's great.
I'm so happy about that because although we've only done the one game of it so far, it's been one of my favourite games.
It's been absolutely
games.
It was brilliant. Like, really
great
good.
Great fun.
You can really see the potential of the system.
Yes.
Like,
well, it opens it up. You need very few models. You can buy a single box that will give you all the units and the models that you need to play that game and to play a good, deep game.
Yeah.
At the moment, although you can essentially play a game with 500 points, it doesn't work that well. It's the game is designed for much larger. The game in general is designed for much larger battles and bigger armies, whereas this really cuts it back and gives you a rewarding experience that you can get into with a much lower sort of price of entry.
Absolutely. And it means that those Arcs of Omen books that you might be interested in buying, which as well as having great lore in, and interesting rule sets and great scenarios that use all the boarding actions, terrain and all of those rules, they're going to be relevant through the entirety of this new edition, which is just wonderful news.
Yeah. On that as well, actually, with the smaller armies, so they have said there's going to be a specific rule set which will be a slimmed down version of the main game for combat patrols.
That's right. I think I noticed that they're going to be focusing for the core rules just on 1, 2, and 3,000 point armies.
Yes.
And as you say, for 500 points, which as of now is known as the combat patrol, there's going to be a refined rule set just for that game type, which I think is great.
That's brilliant. Again, it's this lowering the requirements for entry.
Yeah.
It's making it easier to get into, easier for people to try out the game to see if they like it. Because otherwise, if you don't know people already that have armies and could introduce you to the game, the cost just to be able to give it a try is huge.
It's,
and not just the cost, the time and effort, building everything, painting everything.
Knowing the rules.
Learning the rules. It's a real commitment. And if you're not really keen from the off, you just wouldn't bother.
You just won't
bother. Why would you?
100% right.
Hundreds and hundreds of pounds.
Why would you bother if you're not immediately completely keen and you know that, you know, there's no accidentally getting into this, right? I think you have to kind of want an interest or have friends that are really into it.
Yeah.
And I think that whole idea of creating a almost pared down 500 point shorter, quicker game that has its own specified rules, its own sets, is going to be fantastic. They're going to be balancing these combat patrol boxes against each other. So you could literally walk into a Games Workshop store, buy a combat patrol box, and that is everything that you can will ever need to play against anyone else that plays that game mode.
Yeah.
They'll have their own combat patrol box, and you can play them against each other, and they're going to be balanced against each other, which is great.
It's fantastic, because right now, even just learning to put together your army, knowing what things to take, knowing what works well against something else, it's very difficult and takes a lot of trial and error, a lot of scouring YouTube.
Yes.
Whereas this, it's just, get that, you'll be good.
Here's my online rules that are free. Let's give it a go. Or a set of data cards for 15 quid and then let's go.
Yeah.
It's exciting stuff. It really is. Let's dig into a couple of other sort of major changes sort of on the overall game. They are removing the psychic phase entirely.
Yeah, so I'm in two minds, to be honest with it.
Okay.
So part of me is really happy. I think that works better in how a game will feel. Because if you're doing some sort of attack, you would do it in the shooting phase. If you're doing buffs, you do them in your command phase. That feels more appropriate.
Yeah, like phase-related psychic powers as opposed to a specific psychic phase, right?
Yes. Whereas at the moment, there's a certain time, that's when you do all your psychic stuff. Lore-wise and in a fluff feel in the game, I don't think that works as... I think what they're moving towards feels a lot better. I'm wondering whether it will have a negative effect on psychic-heavy armies that might rely on being able to do all this stuff before all the shooting and that. Will it make a difference? I'm not sure, but it is slimming down that rule set.
It is, and to be fair as well, it also means that you don't have a sort of an asymmetric turn length when you've got two armies that one might have a psychic element and one doesn't.
Yes.
If you're fighting an army that has a massive psychic element, you're sitting there in the psychic phase going, okay... you crack on, and I'll make some defensive rolls here and there.
Yeah, it is a bit more involved, whereas this will keep it flowing and keep things interesting rather
than
someone sits down and says, like, right, now I need to do 30 tests to see whether each of these things work.
Exactly.
I think it is incorporated with whatever's appropriate at the whatever appropriate phase you're in.
More interactive. And I think there will likely be, based on some of the other stuff that we've seen, more abilities that will trigger on your opponent's turn, which I quite like the sound of, to be fair. So that's interesting. So they're breaking down the psychic phase into the other phases of the game, depending on what the power is. Another major change, I suppose, the flow of the game and the phases of the game is the morale phase, or the leadership checks. That's going to be completely changed as of now. When you fail sort of morale checks, leadership checks, you will lose models from your army, potentially.
They will just run away.
So that's not going to happen at all now.
No, and I'm glad, because...
It seems silly for Space Marines to just run away.
Yeah, and for a lot of the armies.
Yeah.
It's kind of a break of immersion and of the sort of fluff of everything that... they wouldn't really do that. I mean, they might be a bit more rubbish, but they...
Yeah, you can't say only through death duty ends and then go, run away!
Oh no, my friend's dead, run!
Oh no! Yeah, exactly. So there is that. So instead, they're replacing with that with something that I think is going to be very exciting, which is Battle Shock, which instead of the units running away, is it changes how the unit interacts with the rules, depending on their Battle Shock. So they might, for example, be worse at hitting a target, or worse at controlling an objective, or have some other impact on them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a debuff rather than an outright lose your models, which...
Makes more sense, I think.
It does.
Thematically.
I think thematically it's a much more appropriate use. And it could also mix things up quite a bit, because that would give them the potential to make it a bit more risky sometimes, make the leadership thing more of a thing, because I guess with our armies and who we've played with mostly,
leadership's not really been a thing, because everyone's got really high leadership roles. It's like custodies, space marines and necrons who barely fail anything as it relates to leadership. So it's like, well, why are we doing this?
Yeah.
But if there's more risk, and it's going to be 2d6 this time as opposed to 1d6 at the moment. And right now you have, say, a leadership of 10 and you need to roll under that using 1d6, adding the number of models you lost in that combat round.
Yeah.
Which is a bit convoluted, but essentially, if you've got a real high leadership score, you're never going to fail that test.
Yeah.
Having it be 2d6 and a roll under both makes sense from how the rest of the dice checks work, where low is bad, right, as opposed to, you know, high being bad in, as it is currently, which makes it confusing. So consistently C-wise is better.
Yeah.
But also allows for, you know, anyone can roll snake eyes.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of battle shock. You can do so much more with that. Even if your particular unit is never going to run away, it might be that their movement is reduced by half, which means they're so pinned down by fire, they can't move anywhere.
Yeah.
And that, as a thematic flavor fluff thing, makes more sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm quite a fan and excited to see how this works out.
Let's dig into army construction, because that's changed hugely. So how do you build an army? So that's sort of broken down in a really interesting way. The first thing that you're going to do is basically the same as it is right now, which is pick your faction.
Right? Yeah.
That hasn't changed at all. You're either Space Marines or you are Custodes or Tyranids or whatever.
It's a lot broader now. Mm. They're not really differentiating between sub-factions so much.
That seems to have been sort of cut a bit, if not entirely.
It's a bit broader. So you have the Adeptus Astartes, which is the Space Marines, and that's your faction. And that's where your main rules, and that's where you get your powers from. Whereas 9th, you would be Imperium, then Adeptus Astartes, then
Ultramarines.
Ultramarines. So one thing they're trying to do is stop, because you've painted your army a certain colour, you then don't get access to a load of stuff that someone else does.
That's a great point, because a lot of rules are basically colour locked.
Yeah.
Right? So Blood Angel stuff, you're going to be for red armies, you know, like, which is interesting. And it's going to be fun to see how they then implement that in this new detachments rule, which is, it seems like that's going to replace that, right? So you will not have a sub-faction necessarily. That's instead going to be replaced by picking a detachment type. And that detachment is going to have a specific fighting style.
Yeah.
So each army will have one detachment type or fighting style available on release. And then codexes are going to potentially include more of those, which is going to be interesting. Yeah. I'm going to be keen to see what they do with faction-locked characters.
Yes.
Like Dante and people like that, you know.
Yeah, so this is something they've not really touched on yet.
No.
Because with the way that they've been setting it up, it seems like anyone can take anyone within that faction.
Yeah.
Which is a real break
from tradition, I guess, right?
Like, yeah, and it could potentially work against their own lore. But it does open it up for people to make their own stories and their own reasons. And I'm wondering if that's quite deliberate.
I think they could possibly just gear some of the detachment rules like towards specific sub-factions. So it would encourage you to have more of the same type of unit colour, but not bind it by lore. Do you know?
Yeah.
Like, it might be more efficient if they're all Blood Angel colour or whatever.
There might be certain things, like you might only be able to take certain characters in certain detachment types, which will be of a style traditionally related to a particular faction, which I quite like, because it means that you can mix it up. Like, I at the moment there's some imbalance problems, even within Space Marines.
Yeah, the Imperial Fists like are famously terrible at the moment in terms of rules support and stuff.
So. And there's a couple of factions like the Dark Angels are massively overpowered.
Yeah.
So this will help fix that. So that would be quite good. And I'm wondering if they're keeping things a bit more open and a bit allowing people to make their own lore. I wonder if that's a influence from D&D.
Possibly.
And the rise in the popularity over the last few years of D&D.
And in line with that flexibility is how you construct your army. Because in 9th edition, it's very prescribed. Or at least it was until Arcs of Omen came along.
Yeah.
But it was very much, you have to arrange your army in a certain regiment. What they now call detachments, which is the 9th edition detachment, which is different to 10th edition detachments. Confusing, but bear with us. In 9th edition detachments, that basically means you need to arrange your army in such a way that you've got a certain amount of fast attack units, a certain amount of troop units, a certain amount of HQ units, a certain amount of elites. And depending on how you've structured it, will give you certain bonuses and take away certain bonuses. And there's loads of different ways that you can do that. And they're all restrictive to some extent and complicated.
Yeah.
Now, it's just, you can have three of anything. Like, that's incredibly easy to understand.
Yeah. Yeah, it's much simpler rather than thinking, okay, well, I have to take this and I have to take this. And if I do that, it means I can take this, but I can't have that. It's, again, it's another thing that's confusing and bloating that rule set. Whereas with this, so you have to take this. Like, you have to have a leader of your armor.
Yeah.
And then you can just not have any more than three of each of these, of everything else.
I think that's so clean. And instead of two or three pages of rules, that's a paragraph. You know, that's easy.
Yeah,
I think that's a great change.
I think so too. I'm wondering how much that might change over time, or whether there'll be other options or different game. I think that allows for different game modes.
Probably
that
could does. Yeah,
very much be tailored to sort of narrative missions and things like that.
I think some of the unit types I've read might have, what's it called, battle line, which means you can have six of those. Like, when you've got real troop-heavy armies that are, like hordes, that counts for that. But it's just a multiple. It's easy. It's three, or it's two lots of three, you know? Like, it's real easy, so...
Yeah.
And also, they're going to be replacing what is also another sort of overcomplicated part of the character side of the game, which is the relics and warlord traits and stuff like that. There's like pages of this stuff. And that's
huge amounts.
Yeah, and you get to pick a few of these for some of your like top characters, your HQ, and they get a little buff here and there depending on what things that you load them out with. That's complicated. That's all going away instead with a set of enhancements.
Yeah.
And I think that is also quite a welcome change, I'll be honest.
Yes. Yeah, it's replacing several different things. Even just taking those things has very complicated rules and lots of exceptions.
And page flipping.
Yeah, an awful lot. I mean, again, looking at Space Marines, it's across the things I could take are across two different books. And it's a bit much. This looks a lot more straightforward, a lot more streamlined. It's a lot more universal. It's opening it up for everyone to try different things.
Let's talk about the current state of stratagems, Ben, because I think this has been a bugbear for both of us, especially you.
I have dozens and dozens of these different stratagems. Stratagems are things you can use throughout the game. They're like a special action that you have, that you build points that you can use on these special actions. Seems all well and good. However, again, Space Marines is an example. You have a bunch of stratagems that are in the core rulebook. You then have another bunch of stratagems in the Space Marine Codex. You then have another bunch of stratagems in the Ultramarines Codex. And each of these stratagems only relate to certain types of models and in certain events. There's very specific scenarios when you can use lots of them. So overall, I think there's like, there must be nearly 40 different stratagems. In fact, no, it was a huge amount more.
Custodes had over 30.
It was huge. I can't remember the number, but it's massive. Days and days of reading, all very specific. A lot of them do the same as other people's stratagems as well, other army stratagems, but they call it something different.
Yeah.
Just to make it confusing.
Just so to make it extra complicated.
Whenever anyone says, I'm using this stratagem, you have no idea what that is.
No, it could be anything, right? It's incredibly frustrating. And it's like, I'm not stupid, but I'm not super smart. And I'm certainly not smart enough to remember at immediate recall the 30 to 40 individual paragraphs of rules that apply in different scenarios.
Yeah.
You know, to different units. It's a lot for any person without doing tremendous amounts of, again, page flipping.
Yeah.
Which takes up more time from just enjoying the game.
Yeah.
for 10th edition, here's a wonderful thing. It's going to be six. Six per army plus the core ones.
Yeah, so there'll be 12 core
yep.
ones, which everyone has access to, which
so
is
So everyone
great.
Knows what that means. They mean there's no ha-ha yeah. moment, you know.
That's it's the gotcha moment, isn't yeah. it? Which makes it very imbalanced with between new and even slightly more experienced players.
Yeah.
Because much more experienced players might have learned all of these things, and they might know all the things you could potentially do, and there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
They're going to have an immediate advantage over everyone. Yeah. Whereas with this, 12 rules everyone has access to, that's fine, you can always see those. Then it's only six other ones to remember.
For your specific faction, that's much better. I mean, even at a glance, that's 18 total. That's basically half what I have to deal with now.
Yeah.
Which is huge. That's a massive, massive improvement. And as well as that, it looks like the way the stratagems are laid out is much better.
Mm.
They have great iconography now, which tells you exactly what phase that they trigger in, the specific effect that they have, and how and when it applies. It just seems better all round.
Yes, it's a much more... Again, I keep saying streamlined, but that's very much seems to be the ethos behind this new edition.
And it seems like a lot more might trigger off your opponent's turn, which is also very interesting, like reactive defensive powers.
Yeah, cutting down on that downtime, because there is a lot of downtime in the game.
Yeah, creating more interactivity off turn, I think, is going to be a good thing, right?
Definitely. Yeah. Keeps people engaged throughout the whole process, because there can be points of the game where you're sitting and you're not really doing much for about 15 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
Quite easily. Whereas this will keep you constantly like, ah, right, I need to pay attention in case I can do this. And it gives you more stuff to do in throughout the whole of the game, which also should bring the time down as well
significantly.
Overall.
Significantly. It really should. And I certainly like the idea of a return to sort of consistent naming structure for those.
Yes.
Because we mentioned it briefly, but I just want to give a great example of what used to be known, I think, like three editions ago as Deep Strike.
Yeah.
Which for Custodes is known as From Golden Light. And then for Space Marines is called something else, or Ultramarines.
Oh, like, God, yeah, I can't even remember.
Can't even remember.
Because I just think of it as Deep Strike.
Exactly. And then Tyranids have got something similar, and they call it something different. And here's the kicker. It's the same rule.
Yeah.
Exactly the same rule, which is very confusing, because I might say to Ben, which actually happened, I'm going to use From Golden Light. And there's like, is that Deep Strike? And I go, no, I don't think it is. I think it's different. And you read it, and no, it's exactly the fucking same. I was like, why have they done that? It's deliberately abstruse.
Yes, and it makes it harder to gain a much bigger understanding of the game. I think they've thought it gives flavour and fluff in the past to different things, but actually what it does is it just confuses the opposing player.
That's basically what it does,
And unnecessarily so. I don't think that's a deliberate mechanic of it.
No.
You're not trying to keep these things secret.
They are
kind of encouraging people to learn about their enemies, but how are you supposed to do it when there's 40, 50, 60 of these different things that are just worded that little bit differently to do the exact same thing so that you can't remember it?
Yeah, absolutely. Right, let's go and dig into the data sheet, because here's a lot of changes, and I think in terms of positive changes, I think this is the most positive possible thing, which I'll explain, Ben, just from my thoughts at least. But any initial thoughts on how the data sheets have changed and your opinion of it?
They look fantastic, I think.
So much cleaner.
They've separated out the strength from the model itself and moved it to the weapons. Each individual weapon has its full profile and everything you need to fire it.
My God, it's such a huge... It seems simple, right? All they've really done is move things around, right?
Yeah.
But they've done it in such a way where, I suppose, ergonomically and, I suppose, from a readability perspective, it is perfect. It is so, so, so much better. Here is an example. And the models line... Say, for example, it might be your Space Marine Intercessor or whatever. On that model's line, on the index card, that's their defensive stats.
Yeah.
And then the weapon line, that's the attacking stats. fucking love that. At the moment, in ninth, that's all higgledy-piggledy. You've got defense stats and attacking stats all in one line. Yeah. What's worse, typically in a lot of Western European and also US English-leaning cultures, you read from top to bottom, left to right. What's wonderful in this edition is that's how it's done when you are when you want to defend something, you look from left to right. When you want to attack something, you look from left to right. I'm going to attack. Well, let's look. Take a look at the attacking line, which is on the weapon. Okay, I've got my ballistic skill, strength of the weapon, AP. That's everything I need. Mm-hmm. When you're defending, you look at your model line. And you go, okay, in this order, okay, I've got my toughness, which you need to know. I've got my saving throw, which is change position, because that's the next thing I need to roll. Then I've got my wounds, which is the next thing I need to check. Right? So it's in a very specific, logical order.
Yeah.
Right now, and I've written this down, so bear with me. Here we go. Even though you shoot before you do melee, sort of melee attacks, the shoot stat is third in and the melee attack is second in.
Yeah.
So that's the wrong way around from a sort of accessibility, readability perspective. Then, once you do shoot, you have to look downwards, not across. So you look then down to find the weapon shooting stat. When you defend, you look at the toughness first. And then you have to skip to the end of the row to see the saving throw. And then you look back along the row to the left to see the wounds.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of looking up, down, left, right, which A, is inefficient, and B, just seems confusing.
I never really thought that much about it until seeing the new data sheet.
Yeah, right.
And seeing the flow. And I kind of put myself mentally through a turn. I was like, wait a second, this makes so much more sense. And now looking at the old data sheets, it kind of annoys me.
I've
noticed that. It is problematic, and you realise it does take more time. Everything is about time. You may think you're just moving your eyes up and down, it doesn't matter that much, but actually
it really does.
Looking to search for something, finding it, then it's like, oh, and then now I need to cross-reference it with this number up here. Which one am I looking at? It takes out some of that complication. It's just making it easier, more straightforward, and more understandable.
Yeah, and there's no reason why it couldn't have been that way. So when you look at it, you think, this is a really smart design choice now. I literally, if I'm defending, I look from left to right, and that's the numbers I need. When I'm attacking, I look at my weapon, and I look from left to right. In that order, that's the numbers that I need.
Yeah.
It's such an improvement. I mean, infinitely better. So kudos to GW for that, I think.
Yeah.
There is a new stat.
There is.
OC.
OC, and I am really happy about this one.
Yeah, objective control, right? So this is a new stat that's going to be on the model line and on the data sheet. And what can you tell us about OC or objective control, Ben?
So objective control, currently in the game, you have something called objective secured, which basically means you have a certain type of model. And if that's on an objective, it takes precedent over an enemy model that doesn't have objectives secured.
Mm-hmm.
It basically means they're a better troop for holding down these objectives and holding their ground. That then gets a bit more convoluted, because you could potentially have one model with objectives secured against 20 models of your enemy any number that don't have objectives secured, that one model is taking precedent over the others. So you could have an entire army sat on an objective, and you have one little guy runs in, goes, it's mine now.
Yeah. Doesn't make any sense, I think. And you have the other example where you have something like a lone model, a tiny model, that has OPSEC, objective secured, and you have a Titan model, which does not.
Yeah, and like a city-sized war robot.
And that somehow is worse at holding the objective than the little tiny trooper there.
Yeah, and for me, I run a pretty sort of elite level, sort of elite unit armies quite often.
We both do, yeah.
So I have generally nothing that has objectives secured. And I can have some big, meaty models sitting there, and it just gets taken away by something really squishy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you could say in the current game, you have to plan for that and allow for that. However, it just
doesn't sit right, I think.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It doesn't sit right with me. It's kind of immersion breaking to quite a degree. But now you have objective control. I think on the wording it said you total the objective control stat for all models within range. So it referred to models as opposed to units. But that also, I think, is quite good because it stops someone who has a unit that they've spread out and just has one model in range going, well, this unit is holding this, where actually you could have a load of models that just doesn't quite have that same score.
Nice.
So it feels more efficient. It feels like a better system.
It feels more real, I guess, right? Yeah. A little bit more real.
It gives you more scope to fine-tune that sort of mechanic. At the moment, it's a bit blocky. It's a bit of an on-off situation, whereas this gives it a bit more nuance.
Toughness looks like it might be changing a little bit. I think about toughness 9 is about as high as it goes right now, or just about thereabouts. It looks like there might be toughness 12 or more for some units in the new edition, which is going to be very interesting, like in some vehicles.
Yeah, I think it's they're trying to scale things up for those large vehicles.
It makes
sense.
To
make it more realistic.
Yeah, it also gives a little bit more granularity between types of units, right? Because there's quite a lot of units that are toughness 3 or toughness 4. Yeah, and that's like there's not much difference between them. So in terms of that, so it may give a little bit more scope for granularity, or specialization.
That I think is the key, specialization. I think this to me feels like what's actually in game going to be one of the big differences.
Yeah. So, having troops really focused on a thing, right, or units really focused on a type of effect.
Much more using specializations rather than having certain units which are just good against everything. And not particularly special units at that. Just a standard sort of unit that, because of a certain, they've got heavy stats with high armor penetration.
Or some synergies or whatever. Yeah. So,
just means that they're great against everything, which is a bit sort of almost game breaking to some degree.
It also makes armies more homogenous, which isn't great.
Yes, because I forget the keyword that's used on some weapons.
For the 10th edition stuff?
Yeah.
Let's come to that. It's the anti keyword.
Anti. Yes.
And I think you're right. That's really going to feed into the specialization of the different unit types, because anti looks like a real actual revolution. I think it's going to be really exciting. So anti is going to be a keyword that some weapons or some unit types might have. They might be anti-tank, for example, or anti-pick your flavor of word here. And that basically means they're going to be X amount more effective against that particular unit type.
Yes, it will give them an additional modifier or more attack dice or something to against other units with that particular keyword that it mentions. And I think that is going to make the game a lot more interesting. Again, I think it's a very clever thing on Games Workshop's part, because it's going to make people buy more different models.
I think so. And it's very clever. It's
very clever, but I think it will have a great effect in game.
It really will. Like, say, for example, you've got that toughness 12 tank or whatever it is, and you're thinking, well, in order to wound that tank, I'm going to need to roll a bunch of sixes in this example. Yeah. But maybe this unit is anti-tank. And it's anti-tank 3+. That means, regardless of what the toughness of the tank is, they're going to wound the tank on 3+.
Yeah.
Which I think is amazing. Yeah. That is like, that's what they do. They're tank killers. And so it makes sense that they're better at it.
Yeah.
Right?
So that's exactly it. With, at the moment, I think I've got my Eradicator squad.
Yeah.
Which are designed to be sort of anti-tank units, like infantry.
Yeah.
But at the moment, the way they're set up, they're just great against everything. Which, and it's good for me.
Yeah.
But it means they're just sort of auto takes, and it loses that sort of flavour and that speciality just because you can just blast anything.
Yeah.
Whereas if they're more specialist, makes you think more about how you set up your army and about who your opponent is as well.
Yeah.
And I think that's quite a key part.
If I know
you're not just taking a default army, you are looking at who you're fighting and you are setting up your army in response to that.
Right. Any other stuff that you want to mention on this 10th edition, Ben, on your notes there?
So there's one thing that has been just mentioned in passing on only two of the announcements coming out of... Well, only two that I've seen of the announcements coming out of Games Workshop over the past couple of weeks.
Yeah.
The new app...
That's on my list here, actually, as next to do. That new, because the current app, frankly, is...
It's terrible.
It's wank, isn't it? It's pretty bad. Yeah.
It's not good. At the moment, in terms of army building apps, the Games Workshop one is not good.
No. Nope.
And
everything is locked behind a paywall.
Yeah. A subscription paywall as well. It's not like a one-off, pay this and get you. It's pretty useless. The only other option is Battlescribe, which I can't get on with. It's really clunky.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a sort of crowd built sort of thing. So you've got to. Props for it.
It's not the easiest thing to use.
No. What I want and what I'm really hoping is being developed is something like D&D Beyond. Where you can put in your details, an app where I could put in my armies, put in all the different units that I've got, and then I can build bits out of that where it will then prompt, and when you're playing the game, you can click on on the unit you're fighting, and it will give you
the data card,
what you
can
do.
Yeah,
the index card or like your actions. I'm hoping that's what they're building. And with them saying that they're giving away the rules and the data sheets for free, feels like it's feeding into that being a thing.
Can you imagine if they release the app and be like, it's all available for free on our app today, on launch day? That would be amazing, right?
It would be incredible. I mean, to be honest, if they implemented something like that and it worked, I would be more inclined to pay a subscription.
Yeah, I agree, right? Make the barrier to entry easy and I'm more likely to give you money for something, right?
Yeah.
It's proven time and time again. It's just, it instead of being anti-consumer, which makes people resentful of your product.
Yeah, which is, Games Workshop have had a rocky road over the last year or so. It opens things up. It brings back that brand loyalty.
I think it would be such an awesome change. And I like the idea of having like swipeable index cards or like having an easy army builder where I just pick from a drop. Okay, what's your army? Custodies. Okay, here's a drop-down list. Which of these units in batches of three are going to go in your army? That. Great. Start battle. And then it'll have all of the index cards available for me. I can just press it and swipe between them. Yeah, I can already imagine a really great way of doing that. And just,
I think the only reason they haven't done it is because of 10th coming.
Probably.
And because 9th is so bloated, imagine trying to get all of that information.
It would be quite choppy. Hard to pass for sure.
Yeah.
I'm very excited about what they might do. Whether they will or not, we don't know.
I've no idea. As I say, it's been mentioned in passing that there's a new app. And I find it interesting that they haven't said more. So I'm wondering whether there may be a bit of an app unveil at Warhammer Fest at the end of this month. So we already know that Warhammer Fest, which is end of April,
I
believe.
Yeah.
Up in Manchester. That's going to be the first opportunity to play 10th edition.
So there will be some announcement, surely.
There's got to be some kind of announcement. It's their big event. It's traditionally been the place they've already announced everything. I think the app would be a good one for that, especially if they've really overhauled it like everyone's asking for, particularly as well now Battlescribe, the developers have given up on it. So what's there is how it will be forever while it's being hosted.
Yeah, and and Wahapedia has taken on the mantle of like just having all of the data card stuff.
Yeah,
like,
so it's a great depository for it, but it's not mobile friendly for during game.
Yes.
It's a great place to look and check stuff.
So out of all of that, Ben, is there anything that you think is your most excited feature for 10th edition? The thing you're looking forward to the most about 10th?
Just the general fitting everything on two pages.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Only having to look at two pages and a data sheet that tells me everything.
Yeah.
Just the clearness and reduction of stuff that I need to remember.
Yeah.
Because my memory is not the best. So, yeah. That's probably the biggest thing for me, having two pages containing everything I need to know outside of my individual units, and then data sheets that contain everything I will need to know for that
particular unit. Yeah, well, that's a great shout. I think I'm definitely looking forward to the restructure of those data sheets and the index card approach to it. Well, I like the idea of just having a little stack of cards, and each one represents my units. I go, what unit is it that's stacking? Ship. Oh, it's this one. I've got all of my rules right here in a really easily readable format, and I think that's going to be a massively useful change.
Definitely.
Is there anything you're concerned about?
I am concerned that it will start off great and become bloated again as they release the same issue that Ninth had with Codex Creep.
Yeah.
Where a new codex gets released, and to build the buzz, that codex makes that army the most powerful by far until the next one comes out.
It was an absolute farce with the Leagues of Votann, where that codex came out, and then I think a week later was heavily nerfed on with other sort of online patches.
Yeah.
Which, if you're not into sort of the online community of Warhammer, you don't know that. You buy the codex. So that was a bit of a farce, and I think, I think retain a healthy sense of skepticism and just caution as to if Games Workshop can keep their pants on, and not immediately inflate and explode things with Codex power creep.
Definitely. Like, if they can manage the power creep, I'll be happy.
Ben, it's been a pleasure. I cannot wait for 10th edition. And if you're up for it, we'll do another 40k episode at some point.
Oh, hell yeah.
Thanks for listening to Board Stupid. You can subscribe to us for updates and get future episodes of the show delivered directly to your ear holes via your favourite podcast service. You can find us almost anywhere on the internet except OnlyFans by looking for @BoardStupidUK, spelled B-O-A-R-D. You can also find us on YouTube, and that's where you're going to see all of our industry interviews. We're going to be at UKGE UKGE again this year, doing interviews with various folks in industry, hopefully this time including Games Workshop, so we can talk to you a little bit about the 40k new exciting stuff from UK Games Expo. If you like our content, do us a massive favour, give us a 5-star review and just interact with us. We'll see you again real soon.